Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of November. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. Well, the weather has been all over the place this week. I hope everyone survived the windstorm on Sunday night and the driving rain. It certainly was noisy here. I had trouble sleeping. Despite the wind, I didn't lose power, and I don't think there was much damage to my yard, and I hope that the rest of you can say the same. Monday and Tuesday night, we were plunged into the deep freeze, and tomorrow it's supposed to hit 70, so New England is doing its best to confuse us and prove the old New England adage that if you don't like the weather in New England, just wait a minute. This month on Council Connection, we'll be talking about BSCB's newest chapter, the Central Massachusetts chapter. We'll be learning about the Council of Citizens with Low Vision. We'll hear from a few scholarship winners. Structured negotiations will be discussed. And finally, we'll talk about Ski for Light. But before we do any of that, I want to remind you that on Saturday, the 4th of November, Bay State Council of the Blind is having its fall conference. This is our annual one-day conference in which we do very little business. In fact, we don't do any business at all. But we do have several interesting programs. Speakers in the morning, including a state senator. And in the afternoon, various breakout sessions covering a wide variety of topics from high-tech gadgets like iPhones and rainbow color identifiers to Brian Charlson demonstrating the use of an air fryer and many other things in between. It's a little late to pre-register for the conference, but you can still get in at the door. Unfortunately, if you do that, you will not be guaranteed lunch. However, it may well be worth it to attend anyway, just for the number of events that have been scheduled. As of this past Monday, we had 50 people registered, and I'm proud to say that I'm one of them. So I hope to see many of you there on Saturday. An important part of life in BSCB is our chapters. We have two types of them, regional chapters such as the South Shore chapter and the Charles River chapter, which meet primarily for social get-togethers, and we have special interest chapters such as Guide Dog Users of Massachusetts, which focuses primarily on issues related to guide dogs. Folks in the Worcester area have been working hard to rebuild the Central Massachusetts chapter, and here to tell us more about that is Sharon Strokowski. Good evening, Sharon, and welcome back to the show. I hear there are great things going on in Worcester.
Yes, indeed. Good evening, Steve and everyone. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you.
So tell us, what's been happening?
Well, I think that maybe for the last year or so, Mary Haroyan and I have really been sensing energy about restarting a chapter. We had the Central Mass chapter, which went very well and very strongly for quite a while in the early 2000s. And then, as sometimes happens, things just sort of dwindled away, and we made the decision to let it go. But I work at Mass Commission for the Blind, and Mary works at Mass Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and we were jointly hearing from people who were saying, we need a support group, not so much for therapy, but just, you know, to hang out together. We need socialization. We might want to do some advocacy. And so we compiled a list of potential people who would be interested and put it together. And Mary put out the list, and away we went. And I just want to say a great thank you to Mary Haroyan. As the membership chair of Bay State Council of the Blind, she did a lot of work to put together this initial list and to facilitate the meetings until Emily and I were elected. And she did it with a great deal of grace and really good common sense, and I think she did a terrific job.
Well, it certainly seems so.
Our first meeting, we were fortunate to have Brian and Kim Charlson and Vicki Vogt and Jerry Barrier who came. And that day, we had coffee and pastry, and the room was buzzing.
Well, Jerry was originally a member of CMC anyway, right?
Yes, he was indeed. When he and Elaine, who is now passed on, but they were living in Shrewsbury, which is right near Worcester. So, yes, and we actually had a couple of other members former members who were there at this initial meeting. Mm-hmm. And what we did is something that I think all potential chapters do, is to talk about what American Council of the Blind is and what is our part in it as Bay State Council of the
right.
Blind.
Mm-hmm.
So Kim spoke and Brian spoke, and there were a lot of questions, and it wasn't what pleased me was that it wasn't sort of like passive listening. No way. There was a lot of questions, and people weren't sure whether they wanted to join, and we encouraged them not to, to do it that day, but to think about it and mm-hmm. think about what issues might be at the forefront for us in Central Mass. So
yeah,
that's
because
that's
ultimately the focus of a chapter anyway, is to start working on issues that are specific to their area. Or special interest, depending on what kind of a chapter it is.
That's right. That's right. And in our case, of course, it would be a general interest chapter.
Yeah, regional chapter, I think, is what
they call it.
What they call them, yeah.
So then after that, we held another meeting, and we didn't have quite the number of people. But at that meeting, we really got down to some serious discussion. What we did was Mary and I redrafted a constitution that we had from our previous chapter, and we made a few very minor updates and had it reviewed to make sure that there wasn't anything amiss. For instance, one of the things that we changed is that we said we would have generally quarterly meetings, whereas before we had them every other month, and found that that was too much.
Mm-hmm.
We upped the dues. I forget what they were, maybe $10, and we upped it to $15.
Yeah.
Little things like that. So
right.
I read the Constitution in Braille and section by section, and the people talked about it and talked about who could be a voting member and who could be an officer. And, of course, in our organization, our president and vice president, I believe, need to be legally blind.
Oh, okay.
Right. I think that's the case, and I think treasurer and secretary do not need to be. And one of the people who was there that day, Judy Savageau, had been treasurer briefly, I think, for Bay State itself. And she said, you know, it's a big responsibility. So we had that meeting and went through all the technical stuff. And then we talked about, so what do we want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we definitely wanted to do some recreational things. One of the things in our area is Heifer Farm, which is a really cool place with a lot of tactile stuff that you can do, touching different animals. They have a tremendous pancake breakfast in the spring with to die for homemade sausage and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we thought, well, maybe we would go there.
Sure.
We talked about doing an accessible trail because a few of us had just participated in the social committee event that David Kingsbury and Jerry Berry were organized, where we went on a trail. Can't remember right now what else we talked about, but I know maple sugaring. That was another one that kind of caught attention.
Mm-hmm.
Notice we like food. So at that point, we we asked if anyone would be interested in serving as officers, and a few people came forward, and then we decided that we would meet one more time so that we could vote on it. And in the meantime, Nona Haroyan, Mary's sister, collected a lot of information that people gave her contact information and set up an email distribution list
mm-hmm.
for people who wanted to be on it.
Okay.
And also people started giving dues as well.
Okay.
So ultimately, when we met the last time, I think we had 7 or 8 people. You need 7.
Right.
To have
I
the
was
dues.
Just going to say the Constitution requires 7.
So we definitely were fine, and we've gotten more since, and I don't remember the exact number. So at this last meeting, we did have an election, and Emily Miranda Luce is our president, and
okay.
I'll chat more about her in a second. I'm the vice president. Nona Haroyan is the secretary, and Marion Dyson is treasurer. Now, Marion is new to Bay State. In fact, she is not yet legally blind. She is definitely visually impaired, and we were very thrilled that she would take this on. Nona is fairly new to Bay State Council. A couple of years, she was on the program committee for the spring convention with me last year and is again this year. Mm-hmm. So she certainly knows what's going on. And Emily has been a member of Bay State Council for a while and would have been on this call tonight but was not able to be because certainly I would have liked for her to be able to add her ideas.
Right, of course.
But it just didn't work out with our deadlines. So she has worked at Audio Journal for many years and so has some grant writing experience and a lot of community contacts, which is really excellent. One of the major advocacy emphasis that we all came to, and it was kind of surprising, is the movie theaters in our area do not have functioning audio description. And people have gone and they'll say, yeah, and if they're talking about captioning, or they'll say, yeah, we just got the equipment fixed and, you know, it's not working, or they don't know where it is, just everything, all kinds
all
of
over
levels
the place,
of things.
Sure.
All over the place. And so actually, we're talking about at our December meeting going there as a group. We have been in contact with the local manager, and he's assured us that they have 12 pieces of equipment, the earphones and everything. So we will not descend on them unannounced.
No,
but that's
no,
something that
not.
We're, you know, that we're going to be talking about. Another issue that raised a lot of concern is our Worcester Regional Transit Authority, which runs a paratransit service similar to the ride, but which has some real restrictions to it, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's no same-day service as in the pilot, and I guess the I don't even know if it's a pilot stage anymore on the ride.
I think it's still pilot, but
I think it is too.
They're not quite sure what to do with it because there have been some unintended consequences that nobody ever expected. So,
right,
they're still working that out.
What we have in the Worcester Regional Transit Authority is that from the very get-go, they have been absolutely strict about the three-quarter mile eligibility. So if you go to one part of Shrewsbury, for instance, or one part of Auburn where no bus goes, you're not going to get paratransit.
Right.
Now the ride had gone in the other direction of having a lot of premium service.
Yes.
And we've never had it. And we've contended to them, look, if you're serving part of a town, for heaven's sakes, serve the whole town. And that isn't happening. So we actually are going to ask Rick Morin at some point because he's so knowledgeable about transportation and how transit authorities think and operate to come and speak with us. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, it sounds like you've got fantastic things already going, and it sounds like there's going to be more.
Yes. In fact, Emily has been able to arrange for us for our December meeting the director of the Office on Disability for the City of Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm going to bring up to her is that there's some new initiatives in emergency preparedness where people with disabilities can fill out forms to make sure that the police know what their disability is. And I think that's been around for a while, but I think they're really emphasizing it more now in Worcester. So we want to make sure that our members know about that and know how to do it. And also that the City of Worcester knows that we are a viable group of people, not just scattered blind people here and there. So we have a diverse group of people, and it's wonderful. We have certainly the majority in Worcester. We have someone from Whitensville, which is a little distance, Auburn, I think Shrewsbury. And this past time, we had a lady from Leominster, which is a good 45 minutes to an hour away.
Wow.
And the way that she was able to get there was that she's on an insurance plan called Navicare, which is for people who are on MassHealth and Medicare jointly past a certain age, and they are allotted a certain amount of trips wherever they want to go for recreational purposes.
Well, that's terrific.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah,
so she came in a cab, and we're like, oh, my God. And, you know, when it was finished, here pulls up the cab, and away she goes.
Wow.
So wouldn't we all love that, right?
Absolutely.
But we were just really thrilled that she would be able to come and join us. And I don't know if she will every time, but she has that option, at least some of the time anyway.
Speaking of joining, what should people do if they're interested in joining your chapter?
So I think it would be fine for me to give Emily's phone number. I think that she would be fine with that.
Oh, I don't see why not.
Right, and it is 508-523-7303. That is her main number. That is her cell phone. So we don't have a definite meeting schedule, but our next one will be on Saturday, December 2nd. We are
right after the fall conference.
Yes, exactly. Exactly right. We are meeting at the library. This last time we met in a small room in the library that was off the Talking Book Library space, but we were really cramped, and so now we're moving to a different room. And it seems like the library is a good place because there is some parking for people that might be dropping off or staying.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our potential members very enthusiastically offered to bake for us for that Saturday morning, and Emily is going to pick up, you know, a box of Joe, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have a little festiveness to it. And the plan is to have a little bit of checking in time. And then the woman from the disability office and a couple of feedback things that one of our members wants to do. And we'll go from there. We have, as far as I know, five people coming to the fall conference. Maybe two more, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough for us to charter a van, which Emily did procure for us if we needed to have it from
right.
Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we're using one of the volunteer drivers that Mab has that has been a faithful ally for us for many years. And we are paying her, but still.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, Sharon, thank you for bringing us all up to speed on the latest and the greatest from Worcester. Good luck through all of what you're doing. I think you're off to a rollicking good start, and we hope to hear a lot more from the Central Mass chapter.
Thank you.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit www.acbfma.org and look for the Council Connection. Next, we'll be talking to Leslie Spoon and Christine Chaikin, both of whom are members of the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International. Here they are to tell us more. Good evening, ladies. Welcome to Council Connection. And Christine, welcome back for the second time in, 2 months, right?
Thank you very much, Steve, for having us on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Last time we were talking about a publication of yours, Christine. Not a publication, but a website of yours. But this time we're going to be talking about something a little different, and that is CCLVI, which I believe stands for the Council of Citizens with Low Vision.
International.
International. And president of CCLVI is Leslie Spoon, and glad to have you on for the first time. We don't often talk about CCLVI on this show, and I think probably we should. So tell us a little about the organization, Leslie.
Sure. Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, CCLVI, is a low vision affiliate under the American Council of the Blind. It's going to be 40 in a couple years, so it's been around for a while. So that's exciting for us. We do a lot of good and interesting topics at the American Council of the Blind Convention. We have the CCLVI's convention within the American Council of the Blind Convention in that week, so it's a little confusing, but Within the convention, we have our own little convention, and we do a mixer for our scholarship winners. We have three scholarship winners, undergrad, graduate, and freshman, incoming freshman, from Fred Scheigert. He is so gracious to give us three wonderful scholarships each year, which is worth $3,000 for each student.
Okay,
that
and
wins those scholarships.
Now, for many of us, and I know I was one of them, my original thinking was that if you're blind, you're blind. And it never occurred to me that maybe people with low vision or some vision might have a different perspective on that. And I guess it's kind of obvious that they do, because otherwise, why would you want to form a group like CCLVI?
Yes, this is correct. There are some people that are low vision and do have some sight and that are not totally blind and want to have the group, which is CCLVI, which, you know, does, you know, revolve around low vision, large print, certain fonts, things like that. That is, you know, that is not necessarily with another affiliate. So
right.
They did form form CCLVI, so...
Yeah, and of course, when you're totally blind, you kind of look at it as saying, well, hey, you know, I read Braille, and, you know, that's different than print. And the folks that read print, they just read print. But, you know, later on in life, I discovered that a lot of low vision problems, you see differently on different days.
And, correct, yes. And even people, members in our affiliate, see differently under the low vision guidelines. You know, it's so different. You know, I might see differently than Christine and or Donna Pomerantz or, you know, any of our members. And that's what's so unique about us. We can kind of share our stories with each other and say, you know, where are you at in this part of your life, and kind of, you know, bounce things off and give CCLVI new and exciting ideas to share with other low vision individuals.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of stories, I guess there's a book that has been written. Christine, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that book that was written is called Insights into Low Vision. It has different articles by different authors, and it's available on Amazon for $20 in large print, and then it's also available on Amazon and audio CD as well.
Ah, okay. And I'm assuming that because you didn't say it is not available from NLS, or is that wrong?
No.
Okay.
Not available. It's only on Amazon right now.
Okay. Well, but at least it's there. And I guess that was, at least if I'm reading you correctly, that was kind of an attempt to tell the various stories of people with low vision that nobody's been aware of too much. Well, so what happens, I know for many affiliates of the organization, they do things at the convention, and then during the year things are kind of quiet, and, you know, then, but is that true for CCLVI?
No, it is not. We are very active throughout the year. We have various committees that we all work on, and through our board and the officers. We also have the book that Christine just talked about, and we work on fundraising projects throughout the year to help CCLVI. And, you know, we're very busy, very busy group. We do quarterly calls, you know, our board calls. They're every other month.
Okay.
Until we get up to convention, and then at convention we ramp up a little bit and have a little bit more phone calls. So we are a very busy group throughout the year. So our convention calls will start up again soon, and that's exciting for our convention, because it's just like the American Council of the Blind's convention. It's a lot to put on.
Right.
We do a lot of programs for low vision. One of the authors of the book, Dr. Bill, he was at our convention last year and spoke about, you know, lighting, the proper lighting for low vision. Individuals, which was a wonderful session. So we have these kind of sessions at the convention within our little convention, within ACB's convention. So
mm-hmm.
It runs from Saturday. It starts that first Saturday with our mixer and ends Wednesday.
Okay. Oh. So 5 days of activities of all sorts.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, yes. Does CCLVI have any state
chapters of the affiliate, or is it pretty much strictly on a national level?
No, we have six affiliates, and we're hoping to have more. We have Florida, Kentucky, two in New York, one in Delaware, which does Pennsylvania also, and California. So those are our chapters under the CCLVI. So
sounds like maybe folks in Massachusetts should get busy and start thinking about forming their own affiliate, or maybe make it in New England.
They should.
Okay,
yes, they should.
You heard it first here. So, guys, if you're interested, what should they do? I suppose the best thing would be to contact you, right, Leslie?
They could contact me. To start an affiliate, you need 10 members, and you have to do your constitution and bylaws, and then you can get with me and Robert Spangler, which is what we're working with. Missouri, they're trying to get on board with us, so we're excited about them. We actually had a phone call with them a couple weeks ago, so that's exciting and new. So we might get them as a new chapter under CCLVI, so hopefully. And then if we get Massachusetts, that would be even better. So.
Well, and you know, the other thing, if it looks like it's too daunting to think about just a state affiliate, New England's got six small states, and that might be another way to go to make a regional affiliate.
Correct, yes. So you only need 10 members to become a chapter under CCLVI.
So before we go here, I think you've said for people to contact you, but they may not quite know how to do that. So could you give them some information in that regard?
Sure. They can contact me at my email address, which is Leslie, LeslieSpoone, at cflcentralflorida.rr.com. Or if they can call me at 407-929-9837. They can also go on to cclvi.org, and I am under the president with my phone number if they don't remember that.
Okay, and I'll say that website again just so that people who weren't paying attention can get it. That's cclvi.org. And, well, it's great that CCLVI is doing the work that it's doing. I hope you get lots of money in your fundraisers this year. And next year at the convention, I'll have to pay a little attention to what the activities are. And
well, we'd love to have you. Just pop in. Love to see you. So thank you for having us on.
Well, thank you for being on the show. And good luck to you this year with all that you're doing.
Thank you.
Let's listen now as three students are presented with the Fred Scheigert Scholarships given out by CCLVI this summer at the annual conference and convention in Sparks, Nevada.
Good morning. Thank you, Michael. I'm very excited to be able to introduce to you this morning all three of our Council of Citizens with Low Vision International Fred Scheigert Scholarship winners. Our freshman scholarship winner this year is Sasha Samua, from Milford, Connecticut. Sasha has been extensively involved with student government on her school's diving team and on the debate team. Sasha shared that her struggles with vision have strengthened her resolve to advocate for other people with disabilities. She will be attending George Washington University in the fall, studying business marketing.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sasha Somwa. I just wanted to come up and say a few words just to say thank you to the CCLVI whole organization. They do a lot of work for the blind and visually impaired. I'm a visually impaired student. And without the organization, not just the scholarship, there's so much that I wouldn't be able to do. This whole conference has given me so much and taught me so much about advocacy, support, and just, like, mobility and structure for the future. So I just learned so much, and I'm so appreciative of everything I've learned and everything this whole organization has given me. Thank you.
All right. Our undergraduate recipient this year is Cassandra Mendez. Her name may be familiar. She's been involved with ACB students for the last 2 years and was a Ross Pangier Scholarship recipient in 2015. She's from Dayton, Ohio, and attends the Ohio State University, studying computer science and engineering with a minor in math. And she plans to go into the development of assistive technology. Cassandra is currently involved with her school and church choir. Here's Cassandra.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you for the CCLVI and the Scheigert family for really just believing in all of us scholarship recipients. I don't think that we would be here if someone didn't think what we were doing was valuable, and I appreciate the support. I have valued the support from ACB over the past few years as a college student, and as a very underrepresented minority, as a woman in STEM with a disability, I have personally felt very included by this entire community, and hopefully we'll be able to innovate a better future for all of us. Thank you very much.
Cassandra.
Okay, and last but certainly not least, our graduate recipient is Jimmy Yoakum. He's from what he tells me is the metropolis of Minden, Louisiana. Jimmy has a bachelor's degree in business, has 8 years experience working in youth ministry, and is currently in law school at Mississippi College. Jimmy shared that he has always had a strong ambition to help those in need. Here's Jimmy.
Good morning, everyone. Isn't it a great morning to be here? The weather's wonderful outside compared to where I'm from, where it's hot and humid all the time. First off, I'd like to thank CCLVI's organization and especially Mr. Fred Scheigert for his benevolence. Thank you so much, sir, for your contribution into not only my education and future, but the education and future of many others like me. As she said, I have a background in student ministry, so I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a Bible verse. One of my favorite verses, ironically, is Proverbs 29 and 18, which reads, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." As a law student, I'm a definitions guy, so I decided to look up the definition of the word blind. There are 13 definitions of the word blind, none of which have the word vision in them. All of them have something to do with sight. One of them has something to do with ill business practices. And three of them have something to do with being drunk. And after seeing some of you this week, I understand the connection. So, I find it ironic that there's a direct distinction between vision and sight. Because vision is the ability to see things that others do not. Helen Keller once said that the only thing worse than being blind is having sight but having no vision. And the wonderful thing about ACB and CCLVI is not the fact that we have a perspective different, but that yet, in spite of all of our adversities, we still have tremendous vision. And we can see things that the world can't see. I believe it's our responsibility as an unsighted community to show the world that just because there are things that we might not be able to do like them, there are also things that they cannot do like us. Vision is quite possibly the most powerful thing in the world, and I find it as our responsibility not only to advocate for more accessibility and to advocate for a better understanding of where we are, but also to be informers and educators of what life is like from our perspective, and yet still show that you might be blind, you might have what they call low vision, but you are not lacking in vision. I want to finish off with another Helen Keller quote. You're at the blind convention, you better quote Helen Keller. She said, "Alone we can do so little, but together we can do so much." And so I'm very thankful for this united community and looking forward to working with you more in the future.
Anyone involved in advocacy work with ACB or with BSCB has certainly heard the term structured negotiations. It's an alternative to lawsuits, but it probably needs a little bit of explaining for those of us who don't know what it is. Attorney Lainey Feingold has been involved with structured negotiations since the early 90s, and here she is to explain a little more of what it means.
Structured negotiation is a way of resolving legal problems without lawsuits. So what I want to do is I just want to go through the kinds of work that have been accomplished in structured negotiation because of all your efforts and the efforts of blind people around the country. And I'll do that for a little bit, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up in the future in those 2008 notes. So I was thinking, I want to give a shout out, especially, I know not everybody's in the room, but a lot of people are listening on ACB Radio. I want to give a shout out to everybody by name. But then I realized there is no way I can do that because there have been literally hundreds of people who have made structured negotiation a success. Every single case you ever hear about started because either an advocacy organization or an individual blind person called their affiliate, called Kim, called me, called Linda, and said, we got a problem. Can you help us fix it? Every single case was successful because people helped us along the way, both while we're working on the case, and I tell all these stories in the book, and once a case is finished, when we're working with big companies, there still can be problems, as you all know. So all these cases are a success because of you. So I can't name everybody, but I do want to name the issues. And if you recognize yourselves or you're an affiliate in the issue, just give a shout out because, like I say, structured negotiation is about all of us. So Kim called this talk An Attorney's Journey from Courtrooms to Client Settlements. And it really has been a journey. I began being a disability rights lawyer in 1992 when I worked for DREDF, Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. I had been a union side labor lawyer and a traditional civil rights lawyer working on race and gender before that. So when I came to disability rights, I was pretty familiar with doing lawsuits. But the journey to working in collaboration and finding common ground really began with ATMs. So the Talking ATM Initiative, which I just have to say, like I said, I'm not going to name any people, even though Kathy Martinez just walked in and I see her, and she was one of the early advocates. The entire effort started with Steve Mendelson, who called a friend of mine and said, there's not a single ATM we can use in the whole country. Now, there are talking ATMs everywhere, and a large reason for that are the structured negotiations that members of ACB and the affiliates have been involved in. So I can't name you all individually, but I do want to give a shout out to affiliates from California, Florida, Massachusetts, Illinois, Utah, and Iowa, who were all active in the structured negotiation about talking ATM. Like I say, people tested the ATMs, they gave feedback to the developers. You called me with reports once they were supposed to be working and they weren't. That is all part of advocacy, and that is all part of what has made structured negotiation successful. We started with talking ATMs. In 1995, Roger Peterson, Jerry Koons, Kathy, Steve, they came to me and said, well, maybe it was closer to 97, 98, we're making good progress with talking ATMs, but you know what? There's another issue called online banking, which is a new thing, but if we don't make that accessible, we're going to be back to square one and locked out of independence and privacy. So we went to Bank America as part of the structured negotiation in 1999. We said, we got this new issue. Because we're in a relationship with them instead of fighting with them in a lawsuit, they said, okay, let's work on that. And in 2000, thanks to the CCB's initiative and the individual blind people involved, Bank America became the very first company in the United States to sign a web accessibility agreement. And to this day, many of you have been involved with Bank America initiatives. I know Bay State Council did a initiative to work on their security issues. We did their mortgage information last year. And that one education that Linda and I got from you guys about the importance of online banking has led to about 30 different web accessibility agreements in structured negotiation that you all have been a part of. I can't name them all, but I just want to give a shout out to a couple of them. American Cancer Society, back in the mid-2000s, they were providing cancer information in about 50 different languages, and they had nothing for blind people. And because of individual advocates, again, I'm not going to start naming people because I'm going to leave people out, but some of you are in the room, you know who you are, some of you are listening on the radio, individual advocates who said, this is not right. If there is information about healthcare, I have a right to it in a format that I can read. Braille, online accessible, large print. So we approached American Cancer Society in structured negotiation. They changed their policies and practices. They committed to an accessible website. They committed to having Braille and large print information. When things didn't go quite right, members, people listening to this radio show, radio stream, called me, and we got things back on track. So American Cancer Society is really an outgrowth. I consider all the web cases an outgrowth of those early talking ATM cases that led us to online banking. So Weight Watchers, another example. People involved with Weight Watchers wanting to use the online tools came, advocates in the American Council of the Blind came to us and said, we need to get this fixed. We did a deal with Weight Watchers. We understand there are still some ongoing issues. We're continuing to work on them. I will be up here at the front after the morning session closes, and I'd be interested in talking to people who have ongoing issues with any of these companies, as well as new issues for the future, which we'll talk about in a minute. Okay, Major League Baseball accessibility. Let's hear it. Let's hear it. When Brian Charlson first called me about Major League Baseball, I'm like, really? Like, we deal with finance and healthcare and important issues. Well, it turns out I was wrong and didn't know how important baseball was. And Major League Baseball became a great partner with ACB and the affiliates. Bay State Council was instrumental in that. And then when we started with Major League Baseball, there wasn't an app store and there wasn't an app. But because we had good relationship with them, and again, I tell this story in the book, we were able to go to them when they got the app and say, you know what? Web isn't enough. Mobile applications have to be accessible. Everything digital must be available to blind people. End of story. This is 2017. Nothing is off limits for accessibility. And all the work that I've told about in this book happened because individual advocates said that, said, no, non-accessibility is not enough. Tons of banks. We did the web accessibility structure negotiation with. Just recently, there was a lawsuit filed by someone in Florida, and we had a great, when I say we, the disability community had a great victory in the very first web accessibility trial, where a judge said that the Winn-Dixie grocery chain violated the ADA because its website wasn't accessible. And that is a really important decision, out of Florida. But you know what? To ACB members, that wasn't anything new, because back in 2010 or 12, I think, we did a structured negotiation with Safeway, thanks to about 10 individual Safeway shoppers, some of whom are in this room, who came to us and said, you know what? We can't do our online grocery shopping. We went to Safeway. We got an agreement with them. Their mobile app, their website has been accessible. They've been very responsive if there are continued problems. You know, Winn-Dixie should have listened to that. Winn-Dixie should have paid attention. So Safeway is another one. Credit reports, the free credit reports, we did an agreement. Financial information, we've done, you know, Linda in particular has done amazing work with healthcare, Kaiser Permanente and Sutter, comprehensive agreements in structured negotiation to make sure the services, the information, the technology is accessible. Point-of-sale devices. The ACB and its affiliates did 12 settlement agreements to make sure blind people did not have to share their PIN when using a credit or debit card in stores. Target, CVS, Walmart, known to, you know, fight every idea of settlement. No, they became a great negotiating partner in structured negotiation. I tell some of those stories in the book. Audio description. accessible pedestrian signals, all because of the advocacy of individuals in San Francisco. When we approached them on behalf of California Council of the Blind and the Lighthouse and the Independent Living Resource Center, San Francisco had one accessible pedestrian signal, not even one intersection, one signal in the entire city. And now there are thousands of signals in a great relationship with the city and new signals coming online that are accessible all the time. And last but not least, and healthcare, let me just give a shout out. Bay State Council of the Blind, most recently this year, great settlement with a local hospital, Mass Eye and Ear. Again, because Bay State advocates were willing not just to, you know, sit there and complain to themselves, but to come forward and to do the hard work of meeting with the hospital. Understanding things take time. Now there's a very strong relationship thanks to the perseverance of the Bay State Council in doing the structured negotiations with Mass Eye and Ear. So last but not least on the topics, talking prescription labels. Again, thanks to so many affiliates and individual blind people around the country and the leadership of Kim Charlson as ACB president and really pushing this, we have made tremendous progress on accessible prescription labels. We're not finished, and we know we're not finished. I want to give a shout out to ACB Texas. Where's Texas in the room? Anybody here from Texas? Okay, that's an example of a state affiliate wanting to fix a problem with a state-based provider. This was a HEB grocery chain, and developing partnership with the Disability Rights of Texas, Disability Rights Texas, which is the P&A organization down there, with just a little bit of help from me on the structure negotiation part, a very committed HEB who is very enthusiastic about the process because they were not sued, they were not made to be the bad guys, they were not issued a negative press release, but they worked in collaboration. So ACB Texas is the most recent. But the other cases with CVS and Caremark, Express Scripts now has talking prescription labels. All these companies started because of structured negotiation. And that gets me to my notes from 2008, which I found in my speaker file. So in my 2008 notes to the convention, I said, in my notes about what I wanted to say to the convention, I said, we want to work on talking prescription labels. And at that time, there were none. There were no talking labels in the country. Some of the companies were doing Braille. It wasn't necessarily consistent. And because of the advocacy of individuals in this room and all over the country, Walmart, of all people, became the first pharmacy to offer mail order talking labels, as well as you can now go into a particular store, and if you're regular at that store, you can ask that it be equipped with talking labels. So Walmart started. We did Walgreens, CVS, Rite Aid, Caremark. So that was 2008. Another thing I reported in 2008 is we sent a letter to Major League Baseball. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know it was going to be not just an amazing commitment by Major League Baseball, but they are so committed to accessibility that they now have like a program where they share their accessibility expertise with other companies. It became, you know, they are so far and above the leader on that. We said we want, in 2008, we said we're getting complaints about investment websites. If you have any issues with that, come and tell us. Since that convention, we have done structured negotiation agreements with E-Trade, with Charles Schwab, and with the Motley Fool, all because individual blind people had a problem and they wouldn't take no for an answer. They came up and they said, we want to do something about it. So what I want to leave you with is, what's next? What are we going to look back on when in 5 years from now, and I say, oh, remember when I spoke at the 2017 convention and we said we wanted to do this or that? So, you know, I don't sit around and dream up the issues to work on in my office. I am responsive, as is Linda, as is all the lawyers that ACB has working with them. All the lawyers do work based on what you tell us. So I invite you to tell not just me and Linda, but all of ACB's lawyers, what issues you want to work on. I invite you to not, you know, just say no. Just say no to inaccessibility. Let me really quickly say one thing about the book. It's available on Bookshare. It's available, and that's another whole story, because if you know about publishing, the American Bar Association published my book. It is not just for lawyers. I work really hard to make it so it's readable by advocates and other people. And they told me the book's ready to go, August 2016. I said, okay, where's the electronic version that's accessible? I need to send it to Bookshare. I want it to be on the ABA website. And they're like, oh, we usually do the electronic version 3 or 4 months later. And I'm like, that's not good enough. Books need to be born accessible. Information needs to be born accessible. Technology needs to be born accessible. There are no more excuses. So if you haven't read, and Dolly agrees too. So the book is on Bookshare for those of you who are members. I do have print copies that I sell for what I pay for them. I'm going to be at the back of the, where am I going to be? At the back of the room. I'll be going to be at the front of the room when this session's over, if people want to buy a copy of the book or if they want to talk to me about any cases.
We're not quite there yet, but we're getting awfully close to winter, and one of the things that happens in wintertime is the annual Ski for Light convention. Here's Judy Dixon to give us a brief history and to tell us some of the benefits of Ski for Light.
How many folks in this room have attended a Ski for Light event? Wow. That is great. Ski for Light has been going for 42 years in the United States. The primary goal of Ski for Light is to teach blind, visually impaired, and mobility impaired persons how to cross-country ski. And if you already know how to cross-country ski, it's a chance to get even better. A typical week at Ski for Light will have about 100 blind and visually impaired folks, a few mobility impaired skiers, and 100-plus sighted guides. The program was founded in Norway in 1964 and was brought to the U.S. in 1975. My first Ski for Light was in 1977, and I have not missed an event since. I was a very young child. Actually, Ski for Light is for adults 18 and over. It's held in a different place each year. And in January 2018, it will be right here at the Nugget Resort. It's kind of hard to imagine Ski for Light in this hotel, but somehow we're going to be able to do it. We'll be skiing at the Tahoe Donner Ski Area in Truckee. It's a world-class cross-country skiing venue. Cross-country skiing is different from downhill skiing. And downhill skiing, you just kind of pray. Cross-country skis are much longer and skinnier and lighter. The boots are not so terribly different from running shoes, except they have little things on the front end to attach the boot to your skis. But it's all the equipment is lighter and more comfortable. And cross-country skiing is a great sport for blind folks because cross-country skiing, the blind skier makes a lot of his or her own decisions about how to ski, how fast to ski, how much you want to slow down, when you want to slow down. Oh, my God, I'm going too fast. And you can make those kinds of decisions yourself. A blind skier skis in a set of tracks. That's kind of grooves in the snow, flattened out places. And your skis sort of stay in most of the time. somebody's been there. And each blind skier is paired with a sighted guide. And the sighted guide says things like, okay, you're going to find now straight ahead, straight, curving a little to the right, starting down, okay, hill's leveling out now, things like that. Look out for the tree. Yes. Skiing is a really fun, and a lot of people say, I don't think I want to cross-country ski because I really don't like being cold. But the cool thing about cross-country skiing is you generate plenty of body heat. So you are a toasty warm out there while cross-country. It is so nice to be outside in the winter and actually be warm and be able to enjoy it and dress lightly and move around. In addition to skiing, we have a lot of other activities. There are special interest sessions that people from within the community present on topics that they're knowledgeable about. There's a silent auction, there's evening activities, lots and lots of things to do throughout the week. The cost for double occupancy is $950, which includes room, all meals, transportation to and from the ski area, to and from the airport, and all activities. First-time participants get free rental of skis, boots, and poles. And first and second-time participants are eligible for partial stipends based on financial need. Applications are available online as of the 15th, which is just a few days from now, on the Ski for Light website, which is www.sflskiforlight.org. www.sfl.org. And the application deadline is November 1st, but if you get it in sooner, you'll find out sooner if you're accepted and may be able to get a better airfare, because we all know how high those airfares were to get here. To learn more about Ski for Light, tomorrow evening, Tuesday evening, there will be a Ski for Light reception in Pavilion A at 5:45. And several veterans, I guess we have quite a lot of veterans, Ski for Light folks, will be there to tell you about what a great event it is and encourage you to consider applying. And you can learn more about Ski for Light. It's a great opportunity. It's, as Sharon said, life is an adventure and take a risk. And Ski for Light certainly embodies the idea of taking an adventure and taking a risk. One thing I personally appreciate about Ski for Light, skiing is fun, but the people are amazing. There is nothing else that I do in my life where I am around 250 truly interesting, involved people. The sighted people are fabulous. The blind people are fabulous. It's a great event. I encourage all of you to consider Ski for Light next winter. Thank you.
That'll do it for Council Connection for the month of November. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please feel free to leave us a message in the BSCB mailbox at 617-923-4519. I hope to see many of you at the fall conference this Saturday, and for those of you who can't make it, I hope you join us next year. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again in December when we'll return with another edition of Council Connection. Take care and happy Thanksgiving.